Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thanks for inviting us to present this paper. As you just said, so this is a collaborative effort with quite a few co-authors. So it's Philippe, Céline Antonin, who's at Sciences Po, Luc Paruskevich, and Raphaël Vargon, who are graduate students at PSE, Xiaoping San, who's presently doing a postdoc at Stanford GSB, and Carolina Westin, who's a research assistant at Stockholm University. So as you can see, this slide is only partially updated. You can see on the March 3, it's not really today's date. I will tell you some one or two numbers will be wrong, and I will tell you when they arrive. Okay, so as you have already seen in a couple of presentations, including the last one, and as everyone knows, China has had a tremendous economic growth experience since the 1980s, and also in science, innovation, and entrepreneurship. And one view is that that trajectory will just continue, and that China would soon overtake the Western countries as the main producer and a leader in all these fields. An alternative view is that there is something that may be restricting this growth. It could be the lack of democracy and freedom, which maybe inhibits creativity. And also it may be that China cannot really move from the imitation-based growth to a growth based on innovation. So here are just some figures, and I'm just going to skip through them, this one quickly. This is just in patents. You can see how the number of Chinese patents overtook US patents in 2015. And this is the same type of graph for scientific publications. So this is based on our data, which is from Scopus, which is Elsevier's bibliometric database. So the blue line here is China, and it's just the number of publications, scientific publications, per year. And you can see that it's just now overtaking the US. The orange one is all European countries. So of course, we want to adjust for quality here. So this could just be a huge number of low quality papers, but that turns out not to be the case. So the blue line is still China, and now we're looking at the papers which are the top ones cited by field and year. And the blue line, as I said, is China, which overtook the US in these top cited publications in 2018. And as you can see, both in particular the US, but also the European number of publications in the top 1% is falling, partly because of a crowd out from the Chinese publications. Okay, so, and I should also mention, in relation to Pierre's work, that part of this is the exponential growth in these top cited papers is that even though there is a bias against the Chinese papers, as we just saw, in citations from the US, the home bias effect is much, much bigger. So it dominates the, if you look at total citations, the home bias dominates. And of course, the home bias becomes more important as the total number of publications in China grows.
David, these are just not all journals, but some top journals, because there's lots of Chinese journals quite quality, I guess.
So these are individual papers which are in the top 1% cited. But as you were saying, so maybe...
Citations
to the papers. We also have results on citations, top 5% cited journals, and that those figures look similar. I will show you in a while. So you may wonder, so we see this exponential growth, but we also know that the Chinese research community had become increasingly integrated with the US, and many Chinese researchers go to the US and learn and come back. So we want to know how big is of this curve, like the 1%, can be attributed to cooperation with US researchers. So just the first very aggregate look at the data, you can see, so here we're splitting up the top one cited papers into those which are with a Chinese paper without an American co-author and just the overall. So the overall is the orange line, and the without American co-authors is the purple line. So you can see of these top ones cited, the number drops from 2,500 to 1,000 or maybe 1,200. So roughly half of them are with US co-authors. Of course, we also do the same thing for American authored papers. That's the blue line comparing the blue line to the green line. You can see that a lot of the papers in the top journals that are published by Americans are also co-authored with Chinese, but the difference is much smaller. So here's to your point. Now, instead of looking at the top 1% cited papers, we look at the papers which are published in the top 5 cited journals within field and year. And there you see an equally large gap between the papers which are authored by Chinese overall and those who are authored with Chinese collaborating with Americans. The color of the lines are the same here, so you compare the orange line with the purple line for the Chinese with and without Americans, and the blue with the green line for the American authored papers with and without Chinese. Okay, so, but this is just, you know, they work together with Americans and then they publish in top journals. But given that China is now such a scientific powerhouse, how important are really the Americans? Maybe if we take away these American co-authors, maybe the Chinese can just now find other Chinese co-authors which are of similar quality. So it may not be, I mean, this is not a measure of dependence, it's just a measure of collaboration. So we aim to look at the effect of what is the impact of the co-authors by looking at an exogenous shock to co-authorships, namely the so-called China Initiative, which was launched by the Trump administration in 2018. And the focus, the stated focus of this program was to counter Chinese economic espionage. But in practice, it became a much wider effort. And in fact, none of the, if you look at the Department of Justice cases, none of them are about espionage. They're mainly about people who didn't disclose that they also received some grants from China or that they were on a program like the Thousand Talents program, a big program to repatriate Chinese researchers who'd been in the US for a while. So in practice, the China Initiative meant more complicated administrative procedures, reduced access to funding, and exclusion of targeted researchers from the US. And we would use this as a natural experiment to look at what happens when you get this exogenous separation of co-authorships. And it's just massive. We can see it in the data. So the blue line here are the number of papers that are co-authored, it's the papers co-authored, the blue line is co-authored between Chinese and Europeans, and the orange line is co-authored between Chinese and Americans. And you can just see the enormous dip in 2018 in the US-China joint papers, which, and there's no corresponding dip in the China-Europe collaboration.
So American is somebody who's in the US.
Yeah, affiliated with the US institution in their publication.
The sum is roughly constant, huh?
Sorry, the sum.
The sum of the two?
At the end? I mean, no, I think it's dropping overall, but But the increase in China European is basically linear. And yeah, and then you see this drop in the US. Okay, so we want to know, how did this China initiative impact Chinese science? Or more clear, more precisely, how did the publication trajectory of the people, of the Chinese who were previously, before the China initiative, were collaborating with Americans, how did that, their career trajectory in terms of number of publications, number of citations, impact, differ relative to the Chinese who were co-authoring previously with the Europeans?
Do you think it's surprising it happened so quickly? Because you think
yes, yes.
It would take a little bit longer.
Yes, but I mean, partly I think that's an economics point of view. In other sciences, the publication lags are much shorter. But we were surprised. We were also surprised at the size of the effect. Because if you look at the Department of Justice and other, like the MIT review has done like a listing of all the cases relative to this program, there are quite a few, but it's not in the thousands, in the tens of thousands. So we were surprised that this policy still seemed to have such a big impact. And as you said,
well, the publication lags in the economics are terrible, but then between submission and publication, but the lag between starting research and publishing
itself, right, yes. I agree, but I've seen other papers looking at, for example, the birth, the effect of having a child on publication, and it seems that that effect is also quite rapid. So it's surprising, but this is what the data looks like. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this, of course, relates to a number of literatures, so that people in this room have contributed to, and that this group of specialists know well. So I'm just going to go through them quite quickly. So one is the imitation versus innovation-led growth. The other one is the Chinese catch-up and work on China-US collaborations. Specific work on China initiative here, I think the work of Ruxia Jia and co-authors is particularly close. So they look at the effect in one specific area, namely medicine, and they look at the effects of on the US researchers of this separation. Then there's also work on innovation and research networks and some econometrics work. Okay, so I'm going to first talk about data and methodology, then the results, and then I will conclude. So we use data from Scopus. So Scopus is one of the big bibliometric databases. It's managed by Elsevier. So it's similar to Web of Science or Microsoft Academic Graph. It contains around 43,000 journals, 78 million publications, and 16 million authors. So it has different data sets. We use mainly the ones for at the article level, but then we also use author level and journal level data sets. So the author level one contains information about who was the authors of this paper, who are citing this paper, what's the journal, what's the field code, what's the total number of citations, etc. And the author level data set contains the last affiliation. But the journal level dataset contains the affiliation at the time of publication. So this is what we would use to identify where people are when they publish their papers. Okay, so importantly, our sample. So we first identify a set of Chinese researchers that are reasonably research active. So in the pre-period, which would be 2018, 4 years, between 2008 and 2012. So within that subset, we narrow down and focus on researchers who have at least 80% of their affiliations in China. So we focus on those who publish based in China. We also look at identify just people who have Chinese last names, or whose names indicate the Chinese descent. and had an affiliation until 2012, for at least 2 years, and remained affiliated in China until 2014.
How do you deal with multiple affiliations?
So when we do the 80% like affiliation thing, we look at all your publications, and then if you have two affiliations, like US and China, then we count that as one half in China.
Okay.
So our treatment group will consist of Chinese researchers with a high dependence on US, but on the US co-authors, but no European co-author. And our control group will be Chinese researchers in the pre-period who had a high dependence on European co-authors, but no American co-author. So here's a number which is wrong. So you see like the number of people there in the two groups. The treated authors, which are the Chinese authors who used to co-author with Americans, is 27,000 and not 11. And the control authors are 20,000. So in total, we have a sample of 47,000 authors. And just to relate that, so the total number of Chinese authors is in the around 300,000. Okay, so this is just an image of the selection tree. So we chose this. We were looking around, and we knew what the treated group would be, but the control group is more like optional. And we just found that the best control group we could find was Chinese collaborating with Americans, were Chinese collaborating with Europeans. Europeans are like in the Western world, they're roughly at similar quality. So here you could just, and for this reason, these two groups of Chinese researchers look reasonably similar ex ante. So if you look at this graph, the treated are the red, and the control are the blue. So, and the left graph just contains the number of published papers in the pre-period. So you can see that the red and the blue bars roughly follow each other across the distribution. And the right side is the H index in the two groups. So we also look, you may think, are these working on the same things? So we do a balance test in a bunch of different dimensions. For example, across fields, they are roughly balanced. I mean, they are balanced within the standard norm of balance. But they are not balanced in the quality of the co-authors. So the co-authors of Chinese who work with Americans, so the Americans on average have higher citations than the Europeans that the Chinese work with. So for that, we do a matching exercise, and we will use a weighted sample to get these groups to look more similar. So the research, but this will be our research design. So, and we will have just then compare these two groups of people, the Chinese European with European co-authors and the Chinese with American co-authors. And we just compare their outcomes over time in a standard difference in difference design, where we use matching to get balance in the based on the pre-period. So the treated here would be the Chinese with American co-authors, the control would be Chinese with European co-authors, and the post would be defined as post 2018. Yes?
Wouldn't you need time to replace a co-author? Like even if it's quick to publish something that's already works.
Yeah.
To initiate a new collaboration with a substitute co-author, even locally, start something, then publish it, that might take a lot of time. And you're shocked in 2018, and we have COVID.
Yes. So you will see how. Yes, I agree with that. And we were concerned, but as we saw in the data, the effects seem to be relatively fast, but I agree that in the long run, one would like to follow up and see if the gap that we will find will close over time. But it doesn't look so if you look at the time trend for the time where we do have data. But I agree completely. We will also look at the like the number of new co-authors, etc. Right. So this is the design. It's a simple design comparing these two groups. What's the development over time? So we don't find any effect, any significant effect, on the total number of publications. So these two groups just continue to publish at the same rate. No significant difference. But once we look at quality, there's a very different effect. So here's just the effect on the total citation count. So the dependent variable here is the number of citations that you get for the papers that you published in this year. So you can see that this has a dynamic effect, and it seems to be increasing over time. Maybe because of lag things, maybe this gap will eventually, if it takes time, it will close, but this is what we see in the time window that we can investigate. So just to put this in perspective, the average number of citations in the pre-period is around 100. So this 10 here means like a 10% drop in the citations of the Chinese authors with American co-authors relative to the Chinese authors with European co-authors. Yeah.
Does this help explain the speediness of your initial graph? Because it may not be so much in the research amount happening, but people are just not citing those papers so much as they used to because of this. Maybe it's the animus thing that Pierre was...
Right, but we find the similar effects if we only look at citations from Chinese authors.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I was thinking European country, the typical European country is much smaller than the US, right? And citations have a local component. I mean, there's a gravity, we talked about this. Mm. Kind of a gravity aspect to citations. And so you would expect there to be kind of more missing US citations than German citations or French citations. And so I think you really want to think about where those citations come from to think about the groups.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether we have it in the paper or we're short to put it in, because we did do this. We did look at, you know, omitting US citations and European citations, just looking at Chinese. So the effects are there in all these subsamples, but thanks for the point. We will include it.
I'm not sure I understand this one. Does it compare the US collaborators with European collaborators? And then
it's all the output of Chinese authors. Yeah. So we have the sample of 47,000 Chinese authors. 27,000 of those Chinese authors collaborate with Americans. And we compare those Chinese authors' output with the 20,000 that collaborate with Europeans. Mm-hmm. So that's those two, the difference in.
What are these numbers?
So the number means that after 1 or 2 years, after 2018, on average, the Chinese Americans had a 10% lower citation count relative to their pre-level citation count and relative to the change in the citation count for the Chinese with Europeans. It's a difference in difference.
Difference in difference.
Yes. Okay. So here it says publisher, it's effect on the quality publications. Here, instead of looking at the number of citations, we look at the papers that are published in the top 5% cited journals, like the top 5% journals. And there you see a similarly large or significant effect. So the average for this variable in the pre-period is around 0.3. So again, like a 0.05 is a big drop. Of course, it's much more difficult to publish in these journals than the average one. So how does this come about? So here we instead switch. So now the dependent variable is the average H index of these people, of the co-authors of these people. So we look at all the published papers, and then we look who are the co-authors, and we take the average, compute the average H index of those. So you can see here, that's a measure of the quality of your co-authors. So you can see that the Chinese with American co-authors, the quality of their co-authors fell relative to that of the Chinese with European, who were collaborating with Europeans. And so we believe that this is like where the effect is coming from mainly, that they can no longer sustain their US network, and for that reason, they publish less well.
So what do those numbers mean? What's minus one?
Minus one is like an H index. I try to remember what the average H index of a co-author is. But it means you have an H index which is computed as the number of the definition. Yeah.
Are they replacing them with Chinese with logo co-authors or?
Yeah. Yes. So there are. So here you look at the, we're just looking over time at the number of new co-authors. We're comparing again, like to the left is just the total number of new co-authors in the two groups. And you can see that there's no difference. So they are replacing, they are getting as many new co-authors in the treatment as in the control group. But what is happening is that that they're losing American co-authors. So that's what you see, or actually not losing, not getting any new American co-authors. So we look at the new co-authors here, and we're comparing, this is a somewhat more complex regression. So here we're comparing the number of new American co-authors of the treated compared to the number of new European among the control. So you can see here that they have the same number of new co-authors, so they're substituting, but they're losing American new co-authors, so they're substituting. We can also see in the total publication output that there was no difference.
One version, I'm trying to square that with the falling H index.
Mm-hmm.
One reason why you have a low H index maybe is you're young.
Right.
So one version is I'm losing US co-authors and I'm replacing it with grad students or postdocs in my lab.
Mm.
And those are going to have low H index because relatively low H index because they're just young.
Mm.
Is that?
Yeah, we could look at that. Of course.
Lab science and non. I mean, you have lots of things. You have lots of different fields here.
Yes. Yeah. How are you? So suppose we do that. So suppose we get like the age, and we find that the H index thing is mainly because they're using like more lab or junior people. And then that's interesting because then maybe over time, this is like an investment. Is that how you're thinking?
Just
dissecting. Right, right, right. Yeah.
How many fiddles does it take to make a Stradivarius or something like that?
Right.
The concatenation of tasks.
Yeah.
Is there a possibility of controlling for the fact that most likely American authors have a higher H index with this at the same level of quality of research? Just because they have a network and they cite each other.
Yeah, so
H index might be an imperfect measure of quality.
Right. So what we do, so we use an estimator called the doubly robust estimator. So there we try to match. So what we do in fact is we re-weight the sample, but it's very similar to a matching process where for each treated author with a co-author of a certain quality, we match this person with a control author with a co-author of a similar quality in terms of total number of citations in the pre-period of the co-author. So, and then we also control linearly for those things. Yeah. Okay. So what we find then is that this major drop in the number of collaborations between Americans and Chinese authors seem to have no effect on the total number of total output measured in number of publications, but a big impact on the quality of the publications of these treated authors. So we find this both when we look at the total number of citations and the total number of publications in top journals. We also find a negative effect on the quality of co-authors. All right, and this is, it's a minor point. So the next thing we do is we look at the heterogeneous effects. So who are the Chinese authors who are most affected by this reform? What characterizes them? And we do it in two dimensions. One is just the average quality of the authors. So we divide them into three terciles, just in terms of the total number of citations that they have in the pre-period. So we look at the most, the one is the least cited in the pre-period, two is the middle group, and three is the most. So you can see that the most affected are the people who were most productive in the pre-period. So we also look at across fields and, or research areas, because it's reasonable to believe that how easy you can it is for you to substitute one co-author for another depends on how many leading co-authors there are in China versus the US. So if there's like some area where the US is not very dominant, it's easy for you to substitute a co-author of equal quality. But if the US is really dominant, then it's much more difficult. So we define a US-dominated topic as a topic for which over half of all articles published in the top 5% journals include at least one US authors. So, and then we interact that with our treatment effect. That's the triple interaction here, treat times post times high US. High US is a dummy for a US-dominated field. And then you can see that the main effect, or like a big effect, is coming from a difficulty of, or from a negative performance of Chinese authors who were collaborating with Americans in US-dominated fields. So we can also see this in, if we just plot, so here's a graph where on the x-axis we have a measure of the US dominance of a particular field. So on the x-axis we have the share of citations in publications of top 5% journals published by US co-authors. So this goes between 2% and 10%. And on the y-axis, we have an estimate of the impact of the China initiative on, to the left-hand side, the number of publications for the treated researchers, and on the right-hand side, publications in top journals. So when we do this split on the data, we see even for research output measured in quantity, we see something for the fields where the US is most dominant and where we think it's most difficult for the Chinese authors to substitute other outside of the US co-authors. And you can also see to the right the same effect for like these top publications. And so here we have chemistry as one of the fields. So you can see that there we see quite a big effect and a quite a large share of US papers.
I was wondering if you could maybe leverage the type of collaborations, in fact, to leverage the order of authorship in your collaborations in the free period. So, you know, like there are two extreme models of US-China collaboration or Europe-China collaboration, right? One is kind of like window dressing. So I can't help but think about this retraction scandal in stem cell where you have an all, I think in this case it was all Korean team, right? There's just one US, one very famous US author in the middle who happens to be on the editorial board, like kind of like there to be kind of window dressing and help navigate the publication process in, I forget if it was Science or Nature, right? So that's one type of collaboration. And then you really have collaborations of equals where they alternate who's last author, who's first author, and there are several, you know, it's part of a stream of research and it's generally, you know, it's generally collaborative. And I think that those things leave distinct trails in the data, and that you could think about distinguishing, thinking about the heterogeneity impact by looking at those kind of like more or less genuine collaborations, if you will.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, and one may suspect that the first type of co-author is really difficult to replace. Or what's your intuition?
I think those are easy to replace.
Ah, okay. All right. But yeah, thanks for the point. All right. So we also looked at research direction in a number of ways. So suppose that we have this pattern in the data that some Chinese are hurt by this policy, in particular those in US-dominated fields. Then we can see that their citation drops. So one way to accommodate is to get other co-authors, but you can also switch fields, in particular if you're in one of these US-dominated places. So we had been exploring that, but we in different versions. So one thing that we started with, which is not what I just said, but it's in terms of research direction, is the amount of basicness, whether the research of the Chinese authors, when they lose the American co-authors, become more basic or more applied. We can make arguments for that this could go either way, but it's an interesting question to examine. And what we find is that the basic research that's done together with Americans falls. But that's completely compensated by an increase in basic research with others. So there's no drop in the average level of basicness in Chinese science. And here, like a probability interpretation, is China has become much less dependent on US fundamental research and is able to just produce it in other countries. So here is the summation of our results, just to at the average treatment effect. So what I showed you so far were the event study graphs, and here's just the average effects for the entire treatment period. So you can see for publications, on average, we didn't get anything. But we do get significant and negative effects for citation counts, publications in top journals, and the average co-author quality. That's the productivity measures. So we look at the co-author networks. We find that they lose American co-authors. That's publications same co-author. So the number of published papers together with Americans fall, and in particular, the number of top five co-authored papers, top 5% co-authored papers with Americans fall. And we also saw that there's no difference between these two groups in the number of new co-authors, but we do see a drop in the number of American new co-authors of the treated Chinese. And for the research direction, we don't find anything on average for the share of like the number of papers in basic research, but we do find a drop in the number of basic research articles published together with Americans for the treated researchers. Okay, to conclude. So we don't find any quantitative impact on the volume, but we do find a significant impact on the quality measured by citations, measured by publishing in the top journals. And we also see a significant drop in the co-author quality of these Chinese. So the conclusion is that even though China now is a scientific powerhouse, at least during the time period that we investigate, these researchers seem vulnerable. They're not able to switch and just compensate their American co-authors with co-authors of similar quality elsewhere. And this negatively impacts their productivity in terms of, in particular, in terms of high impact research. So when we look at the fields, we find that this is particularly, these particular effects are particularly strong for the areas where the US is dominant in terms of publishing most of the highly of the publications in the top cited journals. We also find that those who are most affected are the most productive Chinese authors. So this is the first time we're presenting, I mean, Philip has presented this paper, I think, once or twice, but this is, no? All right. Okay. But so we're really like looking for, it's great, a great time to have input. So I'm just, yeah, before that, let's take questions. Yeah, you had a question? Yeah.
What if the US is the treatment group? What's the effect on the US research? Is it a zero-sum game between China and US?
Yes, I mean, so the thing is that China is not, even though we see this spectacular rise in Chinese output, even in the top one cited, they're not dominant, I don't think, in any of the subfields that we are investigating. So, and you saw that the effect was mainly in the areas where the US is dominant. So I think it would be easier for Americans to substitute, but I'm, at the same time, there is the work of Ruxue Jia that I mentioned early on. She looks at the American and how they are affected, and she also finds that in the field of medicine, they are negatively, their scientific output is also negatively affected. So, of course, that's an interesting question that we would want to explore. In general, one would think that any cutting of possibilities, like here, would reduce output. And how much depends on the substitutability. How easy is it for you to find some other co-author? And we found also that in the places where the US were not dominant, where they're not publishing, there the effect was zero. So there it seemed it's easy for the Chinese to replace Americans. Yeah.
Do you think if you look at this 2 years hence, do you think the same pressures that have led American scientists to drop Chinese collaborators is also going to manifest itself in Europe, or is it manifesting itself already in Europe, certainly in sensitive areas like semiconductors and so forth?
You're thinking that Europeans will drop Chinese collaborations?
Yeah. You see evidence of that?
We haven't looked at this. No.
That should be some fields and not others.
Some fields, mm-hmm. Not others. Exactly.
And it's also the thing.
So I think, I mean, it also depends on how you view the policy. So the part of the policy was that you can't get a federal grant or US federal money if you also have Chinese government money. And that's very US focused, but of course you could have, I'm not sure whether you have like jointly financed projects that are both in Europe and the US, and they could be affected. So we cut out the researchers with collaborate both with the Europeans and Americans for this reason. So the treatment group are Chinese who collaborate with Americans but no Europeans, and vice versa for the control group. But I think it's relevant.
Certainly in a place like Israel, right, there has been a lot of pressure to cut research collaborations with Israel. And presumably may or may not be in your European group, but it's interesting to think about how that might play out, at least as Pierre says, in certain areas like semiconductors at the minimum. Right?
Yeah, we should certainly look into that. If you remember the aggregate graph at the start, the number of co-authored papers between Chinese and Europeans was just linearly trending up even past 2018. But for sure, in sub-areas, this may be, like particularly sensitive areas, this may be an important aspect. Yeah.
So I think it would be interesting to look at particularly that group of Chinese who have both US and European co-authors, because it should be easier for them to substitute because they already have the European collaborators there?
We would love to do that. I mean, the question, it's also, let me just tell you. So those are also very productive researchers, typically, who both collaborate with the Americans and Europeans. The problem is that it's difficult to find a good control group, like a group of other researchers who don't collaborate with Americans that look equally productive. I mean, we tried like Europeans and OECD outside, but we haven't, we would love to do that. Yeah. Yeah, maybe you go, you haven't.
Have you tried to measure how easy it is to substitute co-authors across different fields? I would imagine that the field is very capital intensive. It's very hard to find someone in Europe or in China that can do exactly the same thing. Maybe in social science it's easier because there's no capital density involved.
Yeah, no, that's a great suggestion. We have thought about it, but we have I don't think we have a way to measure that heterogeneity. But it's a good point. We will look into it more. Yeah.
So the effect is quite certain. I mean, it's still kind of one pattern that seems a bit counterintuitive. But maybe it makes more sense if you think about the chill already being in the air even before the formal announcement of the policy. And I think it might help to do a little bit of qualitative investigation to kind of actually talk to U.S. researchers in fields that you think are kind of affected and how they might have approached Chinese collaboration even before 2018. I mean, maybe the event here is the Trump election, not the formal announcement.
So don't try to get many good evidence.
So that's actually something that we use.
I call it qualitative. You call it anecdotal if you want. I call it qualitative.
Yeah. I think people may already have done that, but we... but we do in the econometrics, the estimator allows for an anticipation period, and we put that at 2016. So we also think that when Donald Trump won the election, people may have already realized that it was already in the cards.
Yeah, especially in national security sensitive domains, like
yes. Yeah, you know, we looked at, we have like some measures of sensitive areas and like federal funding, trying to look at heterogeneity there, but we haven't found anything.
Maybe look at DOE funding specifically, like, right?
So yeah,
NIH funding I don't think was particularly sensitive, but if you received, I don't know if...
So we have, yeah, we have... But we have, like, in the sensitivity thing, we have department, I mean the defense, whatever it's called, like the government, yeah, and nuclear and some other things. So we try to look at that, thinking that the effects will be particularly large, but it's a thin slice of the data, and we can't find anything. Yeah.
So there is an issue of the indicator. Of course, I understand that economists have to deal with numbers. I'm a mathematician, I don't have to deal with numbers, but you guys have to deal with numbers. But the numbers are problematic. I mean, each index is or citation index, for instance, in my field in mathematics, the most cited mathematicians are not the people who are considered by mathematicians as being, quote unquote, the best mathematicians. There's not a complete disconnect, but a very wide disconnect. And second, there is a trend, both a lot in Europe, but also in the US, to move away from quantitative evaluation to qualitative evaluation. So what how do you position the kind of work that you're doing in this context?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the individual level evidence, like article to article, then citations is not a great, has like lots of problems. But as you aggregate up to like thousands of papers, we think that among all the incomplete and not capturing everything measures, this is the best that we can do. So I'm not sure like how else to respond to that. I mean, I believe that, of course, if we were evaluating individual people or articles, we would do way better doing something qualitatively. But if this is large scale, yeah, we're left with this.
Following their suggestion, sort of adding some kind of qualitative.
But would that indicate you for
for instance, rather than HEX in mathematics, I don't know. Is there something?
The quality of journals, you look at the quality of journals, so the top journals, so economics, I mean, you know, if you publish a lot in econometric count, for example, I mean, it's not, it's one measure that you do not horrible.
But in math, I don't know.
So that's another, that's why we have several measures of quality, you see, that which are on the planet.
But I think like the higher, maybe a high level rejoinder is that there's a lot of noise in citation data, but there's also some signal. And the point is, when we, it's true that there are citation measures where that we think are especially susceptible to noise, but the beautiful thing about citations is that we can parse them in many, in very fine-grained ways so that we can try to extract things that contain more signal and less noise. And I think that's the spirit of the of my presentation as well. I mean, without citation data, there is nothing that we can do. That's the trail, that's the paper trail of influence.
Citations, that's the ranking of journals, and ranking of journals, that's what we're talking about. Some ranking, some journal ranking. It's also based on citation of the average paper in the journal.
You know, there's the change to open science, I mean, from some two fairly recent papers which led the authors to get the field available were published in archive and were not never published in the journal.
That's the next step. Much later. Yeah. That's the next step. For further research. So, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.